Selling lies and buying time, killing people that's in line. Lower class and social slime, they don't matter. Genocide, sick from water, sick from air. Making money, they don't care. Censorship, force of air. Fuck them back, it's only for they bomb. They shoot, they kill, they mass up from rain. They burn the kids, no one makes gun. Trees, lie to your face, fight and die. Cause God forgive. Buying time, killing people next in line. Lower classes, social side, they don't matter. Genocide, sick from water, sick from air. Making money, they don't care. See their shit, force of bear. Fuck them back, that's only fair. They bomb, they shoot, they kill. They mass up from rain. They burn the kids, no one makes gun. Trees, lie to your face. Fight and die, cause God forgives. Yeah.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Ron Stevens. This is Rock the Boat, right here on UCY.TV, my favorite online network. It is the 18th of January, and, you know, it's warmed up a little bit. It's about minus 4 or 3 all day, but damp. Holy crap. Cold. You know, I'd rather have it, like, really cold than this temperature, because when it gets to be this temperature around the Great Lakes, the humidity and the dampness just goes right through you, but we'll live with that. You know, I haven't been over to the National Post for a while, and my good buddy Chris Duck sent me an article from the National Post. I thought the Communist Broadcasting Corporation of Canada was bad, but today I think the National Post is top to CBC. You know, and when I'm looking at this stuff, I'm thinking, who reads these newspapers? Now when I go up to the corner to get my coffee, the only people I ever see buying a newspaper are usually people about, 60 plus. So I don't know what they're trying to direct at these people, but I do believe 2018 is the year we start to turn this around, and it seems almost like the papers are trying to turn around too, or they've already got their agendas in place and now they can tell us the truth. That's what this is looking like. That they got what they want. They've got their international laws in place. They've got their all the nonsense signed through with the UN from all their nation states. And it seems like they're okay with turning, you know, the scientists are useful idiots, the LGBTQ is useful idiots, and so on and so forth. And it seems like now they're turning on their useful idiots. Now, I personally have no use for science, because science replaced the priest. Scientists replaced the priest back in the mid-19th century so they could move their ecology movement forward, because what they said was, we had to kill God because we couldn't move ecology forward if God was there. So we'll let people think God's there, but we're going to move ahead, and we'll make the scientists the new priests. So Instead of looking to your creator, you worship the earth. And that's been well studied, and it's all written down because they write everything down. All you got to do is dig it out and read it. Newspaper is a little different. That's the propaganda. But you know, when I opened this up and I looked at the headlines and that, and I got thinking, how many blogs, websites, newspapers, and that I was banned from commenting on way back in 2006, 2007, 2008, when I was really pounding away at the fraud of man-caused global warming. People were going right off the deep end. I mean, it's obvious it's a fraud. It was a constructed fraud. It's a mechanism, which is a global problem that can only be solved at the global government level. And but the people were so caught up in that nonsense back then that they were nasty, ugly. And every now and again, when I'd managed to stay on a place long enough, every now and again somebody would manage to deprogram people. And these same people who were all on side with this global warming, when you present some of the information to some people that you can get at that aren't too far gone, and they go, you know what? Ron's right. Well, then they get dumped on. But the whole thing's fallen apart. You know, it was Rockefeller said our window of opportunity won't remain open too long. And it can't, because knowledge is power, and they had the knowledge that there was a solar maximum, and the deep ocean currents were warming up on their normal cycle, and the two of those combined would make everything pretty damn hot for a while, and it did, and that's what they used, that timeline they used to push this man-caused global warming nonsense on people, because people, God, it's hot. Well, yeah, it was, but that's called a normal cycle, and now we've gone into the cooling cycle. And so now we've got the climate scientists saying, worst case and best case scenarios may never happen. If a new study has it right, the good news is we may not have to reckon with truly hellish temperature rises by the end of this century. No kidding. And this is what I'm wondering now. These guys, these globalists, think they got all their stuff in place now that they can call out what they use as mechanisms to sucker the public into believing all this nonsense they've been shoving through the politics, through the schools, through the churches, through the unions, because every union is tangled up in this. If you're a member of a union, go check it out. Your union is pushing the globalist Marxist agenda. Anyways, climate scientists on Wednesday suggested they may be able to rule out some of the most dire scenarios of what will happen if greenhouse gas levels in the atmosphere were to double. Unfortunately, the same scientists say the best case scenarios are also probably unrealistic. That's a double talk all the time, right? How a doubling of atmospheric greenhouse would affect the climate is of tremendous importance, as humans, you, those who evolved from great apes, are running out of time to avoid that outcome. With current atmospheric concentrations at 405 parts per million, as opposed to around 280 per million before the dawn of the industrial era, the planet is already about halfway there. Oh my goodness. But in a new study in the journal Nature, Peter Cox and Mark Williams of the University of Exeter and Chris Huntingford of UK Center for Ecology, that's Earth Worship, and Hydrology, attempt to recalculate the equilibrium climate sensitivity, a highly influential metric which describes how much the planet will warm if carbon dioxide doubles and the Earth's climate then adjusts to the new state of the atmosphere. For decades, climate studies have found a very broad range of possibilities for this key figure. somewhere between 1.5 and 4.5 degrees Celsius, with 3 degrees Celsius sitting smack in the middle of the range. But the inability to further narrow this estimate has been a big problem, said Cox. The problem is the low end sort of implies maybe you don't need to do much about climate change except adapt, and the high end implies it's kind of too late, he said. So some of you can be happy. It's probably not going to warm to the 2 degrees Celsius with a magic number somehow, but now they're using 3. And if it hits 3 by the end of the century, well, the world's over. Right. I mean, how do people believe this garbage? And this is a garbage of being shoved in your children's head. And again, if you're sending your kid to a public school system, you don't love your child. It's that simple. You can't love your child and give your child over to the state where they try to change them into LGBTQ2WYZX, whatever. Feeding them the Black Lives Matter and Idle No More, and the only lives that don't matter. Well, I'm sorry, child, you're white, you're male. We're done with you. Anyways, recently, however, different teams of scientists have hit upon an approach to try to narrow the results, trying to find a so-called emerging constraint on what the possible future outcome could be by comparing high-powered climate change models which predict the future, which currently observed, elements of present climate. Well, you know, they brought out their models long time ago, and well, they predicted, they were sure, yada yada yada, and you have to give up all your rights. And now they got their carbon tax in place, so they got you nailed there. They've got you their invisible fence, their UN agenda fence around every one of your communities. So you got a high density infill. They've got your child wanting to be a transgendered, whatever, and on and on and on and on. So it seems like they're pretty confident that they got us by the shorts, and now that they can play with this stuff. But again, you know, this is just a study. And, you know, we can't take a chance. We can't take a chance. It could be 1.5 and it could be 4.5. We can't take a chance. So we're going to have to keep digging in your pockets and while ruining your lives, in order to whatever, save the planet. Okay, so let's see. To that end, Cox and his colleagues focused on a simple measurement: how much the climate varies on an annual basis, irrespective of greenhouse gas emissions. What we did is look at how the variation from year to year, having taken out the long-term trend, was related to the sensitivity of the system across all models, said Cox. The result allowed the scientists to narrow the probable climate sensitivity range to between 2.2 and 3.4 degrees Celsius with a central figure of 2.8. Well, there we're over the 2 and we're almost at the 3, so run for the hills. Quick, give all the government your money, because every time you exhale, it's CO2, and that's what the carbon tax is all about, a tax on you. Every time you exhale, it's CO2, and who is the enemy in all of this? Just go look at the Club of Rome, of which Tinkerbell Trudeau's daddy, the communist trained Jesuit, who was the prime minister for a long time here a long time ago, I mean, this is like a bad B movie. You know, it really truly is. But who is the enemy? Well, the Club of Rome, which Trudeau, daddy Trudeau, was a member. Who is the enemy of the planet? Man is the enemy. That would be you. So the carbon tax is completely tied to you. They're moving you into these cities. They're going to put you on light rail transit. What's not sustainable? Private property. What's not sustainable? Private vehicles. What's not sustainable? Agriculture, because they want to grow food in the cities. I mean, this is right out of Looney Land. and your golf courses are no longer sustainable. We're going to put a golf course in a high-density city, and you ain't getting out of the high-density city because the light rail transit ain't going to let you out of there, and you ain't going to have a private vehicle. So kiss your golf goodbye, boys and girls. Okay, the result, they said the amounts to narrowing and uncertainty around the figure by 60%. So 60% chance they're right and 1,000% chance they're wrong. We think the likely range is 2.2 to 3 points, so that kind of very much downplays high climate sensitivities above 4 and low climate sensitivities below 2, said Cox. The study asserted that there is less than a 3% possibility that the climate sensitivity is lower than 1.5 and less than 1% possibility that it is higher than 4.5. If correct, this would be very good news, suggesting we may not have to reckon with truly hellish temperature rises by the end of the century. What are these truly highly hellish temperature rises? They're talking about between 2 and 3 degrees Celsius. And they're referring to these as hellish temperature rises by the end of the century. I should thank Cox and colleagues for helping me to sleep a little easier in my bed at night, wrote Piers Forster, a climate scientist at the University of Leeds in the UK, in a commentary on the new study also published in the journal Nature. Forster also called the new study's methodology ingenious. But the key question is, of course, whether it's actually right. The new finding contrasts with a similar study also published in the influential journal Nature, which found that the global climate models which best capture the current climate are also those that predict some of the warmest and most severe outcomes. That study, are you ready for this? Drum roll. That study by the Carnegie Institute. Now, the Carnegie Institute is a tax-exempt foundation, and way back in, I think it was 58, Norman Dodd was put at the head of the Rees Commission to find out what the hell these tax-exempt foundations were up to. And somebody from the Ford Foundation said, what are you looking for? Well, we're trying to find out what you're up to. Oh, that's simple. We're charged with Sovietizing America, which is the West. And the Europe has already been Sovietized because it's called the European Union, just like the Soviet Union. Okay, they've been Jewified. And so the Carnegie Institute had a study, and they're all internationalists. And like Rockefeller said, I've been accused of being an internationalist, and if that's the charge, I stand guilty, and I'm proud of it. These guys are chasing for the final empire, which is a global, non-elected body that controls every aspect of your life and every resource on the planet, and then they will decide where you live, what you eat, what you drink, and all the rest of it. And then they will begin to really wipe you out. Anyways, that study by the Carnegie Institute for Science, Patrick Brown and Ken Caldera, use a conceptually similar methodology, but focused on the incoming, outgoing energy at the top of the planet's atmosphere. That's the pimple, I guess, on the top of the world. Little pimple that's growing into a massive volcano that will melt all the water, melt all the ice, and oh, it's not going to be nice, folks. Rather than annual temperature wobbles, and it actually pushed upwards somewhat the estimate for how bad warming could get. Brown and Caldera said they are currently studying Cox's new research to try to figure out why it differs from their own. Cox, meanwhile, said he saw similarities as well as differences with the other team's study. What we both do is say the low values are unlikely, he said. We also think the high values are unlikely. They think they are likely. It's normal for these types of studies to be apparently contradictory because, well, we're scientists and we're full of shit. These foundations fork us money and we give them whatever the hell they want. They didn't really say that, but that's what they're thinking. The way forward is better to understand the physical mechanisms for why the correlations exist, and we can look together at all the information to make a holistic assessment of all the evidence as it pertains to the real world. Well, we ain't living in the real world. We're living in a fictional world. This is fictional shit that they're throwing at you. And we got to get back to the real world ASAP, and we better start doing that in 2018. Anyways, it goes on. It all suggests that scientists have plenty more work to do in figuring out a better estimate of the climate sensitivity. Their best answer will be watched for closely when it arrives in the form of the next report of the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, currently expected in 2021. In the meantime, getting the number right matters a great deal in the current moment, because it helps determine how much chance there is of limiting global warming below 1.5 or 2 degrees Celsius to international targets enshrined in the Paris, we're full of shit, climate accord. You know, if you see a scientist, please spit on them for me, because I have no use for them. You know, it's like they started puking this climate crap way back in 19... Let me see. There's a film that was made in Hollywood called Goddess Unchained in 1958. And in that video, you can look it up, Goddess Unchained on YouTube, and you'll probably find the climate change part of the clip. And God, it really looks like Al Gore. You know, it was pre-Al Gore, because his nonsense sounded exactly like the nonsense that went on that clip, Goddess Unchained. And, you know, Miami was going to be under the towers in Miami were going to be under 100 feet of water, and it would be a tourist attraction, because you're going to go there and rent glass-bottom boats and tour over Miami and look through the glass bottom and see the towers down there. I mean, Hollywood's fictional. Science is fictional. And it's all being shoved in your face, and unfortunately, people believe this crap. But not for much longer. Cox explained the current emissions levels were probably committed to a warming that would be about half of the central equilibrium climate sensitivity. If we believe the ECS is 4, we're already committed to 2 degrees, he said. An ECS of 3 means that the operational limit of the Paris 1.5 degrees is essentially about to be passed. An ECS of 2.8 means we still have the possibility of avoiding 2 degrees. We're very close to 1.5, but we could still avoid 2. Sanderson said, if this study is proved correct, it could change our best guess of what the future would look like under climate change, but it would make the worst case scenario slightly less catastrophic. No comments. I wonder why. Now, this is the National Post. This is a Canadian newspaper, a major Canadian newspaper. And they took it upon themselves to print this. And I'm surprised there isn't a little side link here that the little 11-year-old girl who claimed to be attacked by a white guy with a pair of scissors trying to cut off her hijab, not once but twice over a 10-minute period, was caused by climate change. You know, I think any time you get yourself in trouble, you know, you just blame it on climate change, right? Now, down here below this, it gets even wilder. I mean, this is a freaking major Canadian newspaper. But when I'm looking at this, it's like they're getting pretty much done with their useful idiots. There's some stories down here. What leather convention can teach the rest of us about sex and consent? You know, that would be under Sodom and Gomorrah, I guess. And then we have another story here. The Y chromosome is disappearing. Could this mean the end of men? Gay couple who ordered wedding programs got pamphlets about Satan instead. I love that one. Will the weather get worse in 2018? Here's what the experts are predicting. A lot of predictions going on. A lot of bullcrap going on. And there's another story down here. I'm going to look at some of these maybe. Was Prince Philip really raised by Nazis? Fact-checking season 2 of The Crown, it says. Was Princess Margaret photographed nude? I don't know about that one. And did a British prime minister really disappear to Jamaica at the height of an economic crisis? Now, it boggles the mind because people, when I go to get my coffee, they're coming in and they're buying this crap off the newspaper stand rack. And they're taking it home and they're reading it. Now, what I should do is go and knock on some doors and say, do you ever read a newspaper? Yeah. Can I come in and ask you what the hell, what your take is on this stuff? I mean, you've been around a long time because I don't see anybody that's 24 years old picking up a newspaper. So these people are like, I'd say 60, probably mid-50s and up is who buys a newspaper, and they take this shit home. Well, they have a memory bank. I mean, come on. What do you think about these stories? Now, here's a story that's really scary. This is one scary-ass story. This is even scarier than busting the 2 degrees Celsius range. The animals are turning on us. There's a story here from Australia. It says, Australia bird. This is in a freaking major newspaper. Jesus, that sounded almost like Alex Jones freaking out. Hold it. Australian birds have weaponized fire. Because what we really need now is something else to make us afraid. So now, apparently, raptors, including the whistling kite, are intentionally spreading grass fires in northern Australia, a research paper argues. The reason? To flush out prey and feast upon it. I guess we could go, I guess this is evolution, because I remember long time ago, there was a movie out about, what the hell was that thing called? This was the Neanderthals. What the hell was the name of that movie? Anyways, they had them on all the talk shows and everything. So it was about them discovering fire. It was the evolution of the Neanderthal, which is the evolution from a great ape, apparently. That's when they discovered fire, right? And now the raptors in Australia and the whistling kite have discovered fire. And they're using fire, apparently. I got to go look at this one. This is too much. Okay, let's see what this says here. Derek Ertzen thought he had the fire beat. It was stuck on one side of a highway deep in the Australian outback, but it didn't look set to jump. And then suddenly, without warning or obvious cause, it did. He's a veteran firefighter in the Northern Territory, set off after the new flames. He found them, put them out. Then he looked up into the sky. What he saw sounds now like something out of a fairy tale or dark myth. A whistling kite, wings spread, held a burning twig in its talons. It flew about 20 meters ahead of Houston and dropped the ember into the brittle grass, and the fire kicked off once again. All told, that day Houston put out 7 new flare-ups, according to a research paper published recently in the Journal of Stupidity. All of them, he claims, were caused by birds and their burning sticks. What's more, the paper argues, the bird might well have been doing it on purpose. Raptors, including the Whistling Kite, are intentionally spreading grass fires in northern Australia, the paper argues, the reason to flush out prey and feast. Black kites and brown falcons come to these fronts because it's just literally a killing frenzy. It's a feeding frenzy because of these grasslands come, out of these grasslands come small birds, lizards, insects, everything fleeing the front of the fire. Bob Gosford, one of the authors of the paper, told Australian Broadcasting Corporation, that's the same as the CBC and the BBC. It's our crown colonial Marxist broadcasting corporations, if you will. We're no stories too stupid, because they believe you're that stupid that you will read and believe this stuff. I can just hear, Ethel, did you hear about the birds in Australia? They got Bic lighters now, for crying out loud. They're out there setting the fires. You get all the bugs. Yeah, eating all the birds up. This is beyond loony. The concept of fire foraging birds is well established, though. Raptors on at least four continents have been observed for decades on the edge of big flames, waiting out scurrying rodents and reptiles or picking through their barbecued remains. What's new? Last week, a raptor was seen with a bottle of barbecue sauce. No, I made that one up, but it's no dumber than a story. There's the idea that birds might be intentionally spreading fires themselves. If true, the findings suggest that birds, like humans, have learned to use fire as a tool and as a weapon. Well, that kind of ties in with that movie I was talking about. I can't remember what the hell it was called. It was so long ago. And it was the dumbest movie I ever seen in my life. And they played the shit out of that everywhere. What the hell? It was a Ring of Fire. I don't remember what it was called. It was about a bunch of people with a bunch of makeup on, with long hair and beards and that, rooting around, pretend to be Neanderthals. Gosford, a lawyer turned ethno-ornithologist, he studies the relationship between Aboriginal peoples and birds, has been chasing the arson hawk story for years. My interest was first piqued by a report in a book published in 1964 by an Aboriginal man called Philip Roberts. That doesn't sound like an Aboriginal name, does it? Philip Roberts. In the Roper River area in the Northern Territory, they gave an account of a thing that he'd seen in the bush, a bird picking up a stick from a fire front and carrying it and dropping it onto unburnt grass, he told ABC. Working with Mark Bonta, the American academic, Gosford searched the historical record for other reports of fire-spreading raptors in Australia. He solicited first-hand accounts of the behavior online, then personally interviewed those who claimed to have witnessed it. What Bonta and Gosford found was that the idea of fire-spreading was well-known and accepted among residents, and particularly Aboriginals of rural northern Australia. The researcher found firsthand reports of fire spreading among 12 separate Aboriginal groups, while three different species of raptor and the black kite, whistling kite, and the brown falcon were definitely identified as fire spreaders. In the paper, Gosford, Bonta, and their co-authors also reported six new firsthand accounts of birds spreading fire. MJ, a Kimberley, Western Australia cattle station caretaker manager, saw kites working together to move a late dry season fire across a river by picking up, transporting, and dropping small burning sticks in the grass, which immediately ignited in several places, they write. The experience resulted in an uncontrollable blaze that destroyed part of the station's infrastructure. Bob White, a firefighter in Northern Territory, saw a small group of raptors, likely black kites, pick up numerous smoldering sticks and transport them ahead of a fire front, successfully helping the blade spread up a small valley. See also, here's another report, the only thing stopping dolphins from destroying us is a lack of hands. So just be glad dolphins don't have hands, because if they did, well, they would destroy us. And here's another one. Infamous Crow gets mail delivery canceled to Vancouver Street following attacks. Anyways, on with the story. Nathan Ferguson claims to observe fires spreading about a dozen times in the Northern Territory since 2001. A longtime firefighter is adamant that the birds he observed picking up twigs and starting fires were doing so on purpose. That jives with other research Gosford and Bonda dug up. Most accounts and traditions unequivocally indicate internationally on the part of the three raptor species, they wrote. They indicate intentionality. Despite years of trying, the authors also failed to find unequivocal photo or video evidence of the birds spreading fires. In the paper, they chalked that up in part to the difficulty and dangers of performing scientific research on the edge of a bushfire. Right. So you're out at the bushfire, you got cameras, but we can't take a picture of the bird because of the danger at the edge of the bushfire. There's a picture in the paper, though, taken by Houston. It is in black and white, and it shows a patch of sparse brush edging up on a rural road. In the background, smoke crowds the trees. Just visibly behind the bush line is the low glow of a burning fire. In the foreground, above the road, dark shadows flap notched wings. The black kites have arrived, and they are ready for their frightened prey. So beware, boys and girls. So, all of this nonsense about the fires and that in California, now we have an answer for those fires. It was birds, plain and simple. And I remember back when I was a kid, the movie The Birds, causing all kinds of problems for people. Now, I got to do this one, too, because I like this. I got to thank Duck for sending this to me, because this is right out of Nutville. Gay couple who ordered wedding programs got pamphlets about Satan instead. The couple seeks a judgment, declaring the company conduct was unlawful, as well as an unspecified award for economic damages, mental anguish, and emotional distress. Well, you poor little boys who lost your wives, the day before their wedding in September, Stephen and Andrew Borg, Hensley and Andrew Borg, received a package containing what they thought would be the programs for their ceremony. Celebration, their design said in bold letters at the top, "Welcome to Andrew and Stephen's wedding." But when they opened the package, they say they found 80 copies of a religious pamphlet instead of the 100 copies of the wedding program they had ordered. The pamphlet spoke ominously of sin, lust, temptation, according to a lawsuit they filed in the United States District Court in Massachusetts. "Fight the good fight of faith," read a copy of the pamphlet, including in the lawsuit titled "Understanding Temptation." The supreme tempter is Satan, who uses our weakness to lead us to sin. Hensley and Borg, both residents of Australia. Oh, Jesus. Now, this was National Post. It's all these Australia's obviously gone off the deep end. Both residents of Australia, reportedly in their 30s, are suing the company they had hired to print their wedding programs, Vistaprint, alleging that the pamphlets were clearly sent to intimidate, threaten, and harass plaintiffs because they are gay men. The lawsuit charges that the two were discriminated against because of their sexual orientation. Vistaprint, a Dutch company, runs its operations in North America out of Lexington, Massachusetts. Hensley and Borg were married in Pennsylvania. The lawsuit says the couple seeks judgment, claiming the company's conduct was unlawful, as well as an unspecified award for economic damage, mental anguish, and emotional distress they have suffered as a result. Well, come to Canada and you get free drugs for that. The couple had paid $79.49 for the programs, according to the suit. The pamphlet comes from a Catholic campaign called Battle Ready. The pages presented in the lawsuit do not include explicit references to homosexuality. There is illustrated with a picture of a soldier holding his head near an image of a medal. "Satan entices your flesh with evil desires," it reads. "If you did not desire it, you would not be tempted by it." In a statement, Mr. Prince said it was conducting an investigation of what happened after it was notified of the incident when the lawsuit was filed Tuesday. To know that any customer could feel treated in such a way, especially during a time that we should be filled with joy, is extremely disheartening, the company said. We have never been more disappointed to let a customer down. Mr. Perrin in no way condones and does not tolerate discrimination against any of our customers based on race, religion, gender, or sexual orientation. The company said it had learned that the materials that were intended to be printed for one customer were incorrectly sent to this couple by a third-party fulfiller. In a statement, Borg's lawyer, Goldberg, said it was unfortunate that not all corporations are tolerant on the wide array of lifestyles that make up their customer base. We are committed to holding Vistaprint and all companies who discriminate against members of the LGBTQ community accountable for their actions, said the lawyer. Bite me, lawyer. Let's see. This is just beyond stupid. Just totally nuts. That's all you can say about this stuff. I mean, I told somebody years ago, you know, if you want to get closer to the truth, you might as well pick up the National Enquirer. Because as crazy as that damn thing is, you're probably a lot closer to the truth than you are in a regular newspaper. Now, here we have a picture of Putin with a gun wandering around in the outback somewhere. And it says, the Y chromosome is disappearing. Could this mean the end of men? The DNA strand may have just 4.6 million years left. This might sound like a long time, but life has only existed on Earth for 3.5 billion years. Right. The Y chromosome may be a symbol of masculinity, but is becoming increasingly clear that it is anything but strong and enduring. Although it carries the master switch gene, SRY, that determines whether an embryo will be developed as a male or female, it contains very few other genes and is the only chromosome not necessary for life. Women, after all, manage just fine without one. What's more, the Y chromosome has degenerated rapidly, leaving females with two perfectly normal X chromosomes, with a male with an X and a Y. Oh, a shriveled Y. Oh, excuse me. A shriveled Y. If the same rate of degeneration continues, the Y chromosome has just 4.6 million years left before it disappears completely. This is what I love about science. This minute while I spit on it, tweet. You know, you're pissing around with this climate change bullshit. You know, it would be 1.5, or could it bust into the 3 range? Oh my God. This is a planet that runs on a cycle, which is self-healing. How stupid are people that they think these dickweeds can, shoot out 100 years and say, oh, we're screwed. Better get a carbon tax on everybody. Better get them into high-density cities. Better take their cars away, too. And this idea of private property rights, that's got to go. Because, you know, so they're just kicking this out, you know, to the end of the century. But this set of scientists... say that the Y chromosome will disappear completely in just 4.6 million years. Not 4.4, 4.2, or 5.3, but exactly 4.6 million years. Tooey to you stupid ass people who call yourselves scientists. This may sound like a long time, but when you consider life has only existed for 3.5 billion years, the Y chromosome hasn't always been like this. If we rewind the clock to 166 million years ago, to the very first mammals, the story was completely different. The early proto-Y chromosome was originally the same size as the X chromosome and contained all the same genes. However, Y chromosomes have a fundamental flaw. Unlike other chromosomes, which we have two copies in each of our cells, Y chromosomes are only ever present as a single copy passed from fathers to their sons. This means that the genes on the Y chromosome cannot undergo genetic recombination, the shuffling of genes that occurs in each generation, which helps to eliminate damaging gene mutations. Deprived of the benefits of recombination, Y chromosomal genes degenerate over time and are eventually lost from the genome. Despite this, research has shown that the Y chromosome has developed some pretty convincing mechanisms to put the brakes on, slowing down the rate of gene loss to a possible standstill. Wait a minute. Let's see. This sounds a lot like the climate change thing, eh? These guys talk out both sides of their mouth. The Y chromosome is gone, but could put the brakes on, slowing the rate of gene loss to a possible standstill. For example, a recent Danish study published in the PLOS Genetics sequenced portions of the Y chromosome from 62 different men and found that it is prone to large-scale structural rearrangements, allowing gene amplification, the acquisition of multiple copies of genes that promote healthy sperm function and mitigate gene loss. The study also showed that the Y chromosome has developed unusual structures called palindromes. DNA sequences that read the same forwards as backwards, like the word kayak, which protect it from further degradation. They recorded a high rate of gene conversion events within the sequences. This is basically a copy and a paste process that allows damaged genes to be repaired using an undamaged backup copy as a template. Writing in Molecular Biology and Evolution recently, researchers give evidence that this increase in gene copy number in mice is a result of natural selection. On the question of whether the Y chromosome will actually disappear, you just told us it was going to disappear two or three times. You just, at the top of the story, you told us it was going to disappear. You told us we're going to burn up, then you told us we're not going to burn up. I mean, come on, people. This is how this, all of this shit, excuse my language, if you've ever read UN documents, most people can't get through the first three or four paragraphs of UN documents. It's linguistic puke on paper, and this is exactly what this is. This is UN linguistics. Nobody, like, when you're done reading all this shit and all these studies, you go, what? On the question of whether the Y chromosome will actually disappear, the scientific community, like the BRIEX-consumed UK at the moment, is currently divided into the leavers and the remainers. The latter group argues that its defense mechanism do a great job and have rescued the Y chromosome, but the leavers say that all they're doing is allowing the Y chromosome to cling on by its fingernails before eventually dropping off a cliff. The debate, therefore, continues. A leading proponent of the leave argument, Jerry Graves from La Trobe University in Australia, claims that if you take a long-term perspective, the Y chromosomes are inevitably doomed, even if they sometimes hold on a bit longer than expected. In 2016 paper, she points out that Japanese spiny rats and mole voles have lost their Y chromosome entirely, and argues that the process is of genes being lost or created on the Y chromosome inevitably lead to fertility problems. This, in turn, can ultimately drive the formation of entirely new species. The demise of men, question. As we argue in a chapter in the new book, even if the Y chromosome in humans does disappear, it does not necessarily mean that males themselves are on their way out. Even in the species that have actually lost their Y chromosomes completely, males and females are both still necessary for reproduction. In these cases, the master switch gene that determines genetic maleness has moved to a different chromosome, meaning that these species produce males without needing a Y chromosome. However, the new sex-determining chromosome, the one that CRY moves on to, should then start the process of degradation all over again due to the same lack of recombination that doomed the previous Y chromosomes. However, the interesting thing about humans is that while the Y chromosome is needed for normal human reproduction, many of the genes it carries are not necessary if you use assisted reproduction techniques. This means that genetic engineering may soon be able to replace the gene function of the Y chromosome, allowing same-sex female couples or infertile men to conceive. However, even if it became possible for everybody to conceive in this way, it seems highly unlikely that fertile humans would just stop reproducing naturally. Although this is an interesting and hotly debated area of genetic research, there is little need to worry. We don't even know whether the Y chromosome will disappear at all. And as we've shown, even if it does, we will most likely continue to need men so that normal reproduction can continue. Well, there's a little piece down here. Indeed, the prospect of a, quote, farm animal type system where a few lucky males are selected to father the majority of our children is certainly not on the horizon. In any event, there will be far more pressing concerns over the next 4.6 million years. Now, somebody got paid to do the studies. Somebody got paid to write this shit. These are people with certificates of PhDs or whatever hanging on their walls. This is beyond stupid. Everything I've read tonight is beyond stupid. But here it is in a major national newspaper, the National Post. You know, every time I see somebody pick up a paper and take it to the counter and buy it, you know, I ask them what the hell they're doing. Why are you paying for that? I mean, some of these papers are freaking nuts, man. Like the Saturday Star here in my little town, which is about 2 hours out of Toronto, somewhere around $5. And then you take this piece of nonsense home and read it, I guess. I don't know what else you would do with it. Roll it up in little things and leave them outside, put them on fire, I suppose, so the birds could come and burn something down. I don't know, man. This is stupid. Christopher. Oh, and there you are. Thanks for sending me to Crazyville, buddy.
Yeah, wasn't that something?
I couldn't read the one about the guys in leather. I couldn't go there. I ain't even going there after. This is beyond stupid. And I wonder why this is the kind of crap. This is the sad part. This is the crap the teachers are shoving down the kids' faces. And they wonder why the kids are screwed up.
Well, that's what's scaring me. It's I read the paper in the morning, and the what I see coming across and what they're putting on is beyond belief. It's something that would not have been put up with like even 20 years ago. People would have been saying
they would have went down and burnt the damn newspaper down.
Yeah.
You know, when you go back and study in the late 1800s, early 1900s, all the protests that were going on in this nation, especially in Montreal and Quebec, and that over vaccinations. And then you wonder today,
they had a super vaccination. They're studying now. The super flu vaccination. Yeah.
Right. But you wonder why the reproductive stuff's going to hell. They know why it's going to hell, because they're shoving all these vaccinations into these kids' bodies. That vaccination they had for the young prepubescent girls, the odds on getting that particular cancer that vaccine was for, I studied that long time ago, was about the same chance as winning one or two major lotteries. I mean, the odds on getting that particular cancer was almost zero. And they went out and vaccinated all these little girls. And I'm sure some of them are sterile. And then, you know, then they started giving the same vaccination, a cervical cancer vaccination to little boys. So why the parents put up with this shit is beyond me. I have no idea. I mean, if I was a parent, I'd probably be in jail. I mean, people got to get their act together somehow. It's beyond ridiculous. Like, find me a scientist, or I'm going to slap in the head. You know, it was Suzuki that said at a university talk he gave, like, it's probably 20, almost 30 years ago now. And he told the student body, things that we believe is scientific solid today, in 20 years ago, we'll likely go, what the hell were we thinking? And that's the whole point of science. They blow this shit out, yeah, you get you to believe it. They know it ain't true. And they just keep rolling this crap out at you. And, I mean, everything they basically do has been proven to be bullshit. They're just collecting money off these tax-exempt foundations.
Well, that's one of the things that troubles me is it's we all know about science, and science is supposed to be you always ask questions, but nobody's asking questions as to why the science.
What happened to you? Well, I guess we can't say anything bad about science. I don't know what happened to Christopher there. He seems to be here. Microsoft must have a hold of Chris's computer right now, maybe. I don't know. No, I just lost him. Well, anyways, Chris, I don't know what happened there, but you disappeared. Thanks for calling in, and particularly thanks for sending me that newspaper. I much appreciate it. Anyways, let's see what we're doing here. Today's Thursday, so I'm not doing the show over at Revolution Radio Saturday night anymore. I moved it over to Sunday at noon to 2, which is the same hours that my show is on UCY on Sunday. So we're going to be simulcasting from Revolution Radio into UCY on Sundays because I can't do it anymore, you know. I'm 138 years old. Chris will vouch on that. And, you know, Saturday night I do the show to midnight, and I rarely get to bed before 3 o'clock. And then I got to get up and try and get something cooking for Sunday. So it's just getting to be too much. And now I'm running in an election, so I got to concentrate on that a little bit. I got to get some websites built and this kind of nonsense and get that show ready to go. And so we're just going to back off to one show Saturday night. I know what's going to happen too. Once that show is missing for a while, I'm probably going to be looking for another show through the week somewhere. You know, an eight to nine show would be pretty cool. Anyways, to hear music. Thank you again, Chris. Thank you, UCY.TV, Jules. I hear music, that's been out of time. So everybody have a great night. And remember, there's a real time. There's some things that pop up in the back of the head. Don't go to the top of the head.